Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. In this episode, I get to interview Dr. Elizabeth Yurth. Once again, Dr. Yurth was on the podcast a couple months ago, but we left so much information on the table, we felt that we needed to have another go at it together. She is the medical director of the Boulder Longevity Institute, which she co-founded in 2006. So a little bit about the Boulder Longevity Institute is that it specializes in advanced research-based longevity medicine and includes treatments such as bioidentical hormone therapy and regenerative peptide therapy. Dr. Yurth is also double certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation and anti-aging regenerative medicine. She's also a specialist in spine and regenerative medicine. And Dr. Yurth has a Stanford affiliated fellowship in sports and spine medicine and a dual fellowship in anti-aging and regenerative medicine and anti-aging regenerative and functional medicine through A4M. In addition, one more thing, Dr. Yurth has been selected as one of the 25 Mastermind Physician Fellows in the SEEDS Scientific Research and Performance Mastermind, which is the SSRP. And this ultimately is what allows her to really stay abreast and to also to teach others in this emerging field of cellular medicine. And if that's not enough, Dr. Yurth is also an active athlete. She's consulted with numerous sports teams, and she's just all around a fabulous, awesome human being. We have a great time chatting together. So in today's podcast, we kind of shoot the breeze for the first 7 minutes. So if you're in a bit of a rush, you might want to gloss over that. But what we really talk about in this episode is about the combination of fat loss with lean muscle building. You know, we cover a lot of ground as we always do. We talk about a couple of peptides you may not necessarily associate with the act of losing fat and building muscle. Things like thymus and alpha 1 come into play, things like oxytocin. There will be the tried and true, the peptides that you might expect to find in a podcast like this, but there will also be a couple of surprises. We also, one other topic that we touch on, and this is closer to the beginning of the podcast. We talk about the antioxidant myth, this whole issue of how many antioxidants should you really be taking because maybe too much is not so good and might actually block some really important processes in the body. I'm going to let you get on with the show. A couple more things I just wanted to share with you is if you find value in this podcast, then please leave us a review and by all means, send me your questions and comments. But also share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with anybody who you think really needs to hear this information. Thank you for being here. And once again, to reach Dr. Yurth, because I was so gaga about interviewing her again, I forgot to get her to herself talk about her own website. You can find her at the Boulder Longevity Institute, which is in Colorado. So thanks for being here today and enjoy the episode. All right. Welcome back, Betsy. Thank you so much for agreeing to do another episode with me today.
I love talking to you. So thank you for inviting me.
The feeling is mutual.
Yeah. For your listeners, we always sit here and chat for a good half hour before these ever start because we have so much to talk about. So
yeah, we could almost do a podcast on the pre-podcast podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We just sit there and chat.
We could do that someday. Here's a little preview into the brains of Betsy and Nat before.
Yeah, right. Honestly, sometimes just listening to people talk is, you know, really informative. I always find that's probably what's lacking now when we're doing all these Zoom conferences. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're actually at real conferences and you're just sitting at tables talking to people and listening to other people interact, you learn so much, sometimes more than you actually do from the conferences yourself. I think it's one of the things I've been missing by not going to conferences and, you know, not having this, like, just listening to people, all these smart people talk to each other. So it is sometimes fun just to listen to two people kind of kick back and forth, things they're doing, things they're trying, you know, that we sometimes don't always, you know, just sit there and focus on. So we should just do that. We'll just do the girls discuss stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's definitely, I have to say, we've lost something in losing the in-person conferences right now. I mean, as much as I'm all about Zoom, I think it's great, but there's a piece of in-person conferences, that connection with people that you may not have spoken to otherwise. And to your point, like, just conversation. This is not about me presenting something or you presenting something to me. It's about a conversation where people exchange ideas in a very fluid way without starting out with an intention.
Right.
Stuff that comes out from that. Anyway, we'll get back to it eventually. I know we will. Or we'll start making up our own.
Exactly.
We'll just have to go rogue and, you know, create our own.
Yeah, it was funny when we had our first lockdown back in March. I was out in Arizona visiting a couple of my kids who are in school there. And there was a gym there that really was, you know, gyms have become like speakeasies now, right? Like, gyms close up and there's still a few people who are like, I'm not going to close my gym. You know, so this like gym had, the windows were all blacked out and, you had to like do a code on the door, the blacked out windows, and you had to like, knock on the door to get in. And
yeah, or go in the back door. I work out at a personal training gym. So it's literally me and the trainer. So explain to me how.
Right, how that's
shut, right?
Exactly.
And I just sent him an email this week, and because I'm sure we're going into some upgraded form of lockdown right now. And I just said to him, we need to go rogue, man. We need to unlock the back door, paper the windows, and let's just
have nobody, right?
We will not get sick. We will not make anyone else sick. Like we have to get a bit
sick. Take your vitamin D, be healthy, eat well, and you're not going to get sick. Unfortunately, that's not what we're preaching.
And sleep. Don't forget to
sleep. Right.
And for God's sake, stop drinking.
I know. Is that crazy? The one thing that's open is the liquor stores. And they just presented a study that showed that alcohol had a very negative effect. So we close all the gyms, but we open all the liquor stores. It's horrendous.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, this conversation around alcohol, because I don't not drink, but I don't drink. Like I could care less about booze. So, but I find, especially in my age group, which is in the 50 plus, it's an entitlement. It's a right. It's a, what do you mean stop drinking? Like, why would I do that? And I'm like, well, why wouldn't you? I could give you 20 good reasons why smoking, why you shouldn't.
Yeah. What are your reasons to drink? And it is interesting that within my patients, or even you're right, my peer group, and women, maybe even more than men, that it is kind of a norm to have a couple of glasses of wine a night.
Yeah.
That's sort of considered normal. And when I tell people, that's not really normal or good, they're kind of like, well, that's fine. And then they're all trying to lose weight, like talking about today, but they're still doing their two glasses of wine because that's fine.
Well, because they have to, because how else would I unwind? I'm
like, how else? Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's a stress workout. Reliever. Yeah. Yeah. It's a stress reliever.
I think about 10 other ways. Anyway, I mean, not to be judgy, but we can't help it sometimes. We do get a little judgy, but not to be judgy. But I think that the work that I do with my clients is helping them to really reframe, why are you drinking and why do you think you need to drink? And I mean, look, having a glass of wine once in a while, it's not going to kill you.
Right.
But if it's your norm and we have to now, make a plan that, like, I do this with my husband regularly. I'm like, okay, from Sunday to Thursday, no booze.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay.
Right. Find some other way to deal with your stress. Right. And it is. I mean, it really is considered normal, as opposed to this is not normal to drink every night.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so, and to the point of what we're going to be talking about, drinking causes oxidative stress on the system. It raises inflammation in the system. And so right away, it raises the bar on how much you have to overcome to get to your goals. So this is not the anti-drinking podcast episode. Yeah. We could do that another day. But to be clear, it's not getting you to your goals.
Yeah. And that might be a very simple for weight loss. Simply actually stopping the alcohol is a pretty simple way to drop 5-8 pounds with doing nothing else.
Talk about low hanging fruit, right?
Yeah,
it is really for some. I mean, I love when somebody comes to me to work with me and they are drinking a bottle of wine or, a couple of bottles of wine a week. I'm like, all right, we got this. Unless you're an alcoholic, we're going to give you a very quick win here.
Yeah. 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 People come to me, okay, I want peptides and hormones and my thyroid needs to be working better. And like, okay, how much are you drinking? I have a drink or two a night. I go, okay, we'll start there and then we'll work on hormones and, you know.
And then do you ever ask them, and how big is the glass?
Well, that's the other thing. When people say, well, I think I heard wine's really good for you. I said, yeah, it's 2 tablespoons. It's actually not even a small glass is actually potentially a beneficial thing, but not even a small glass of wine.
Yeah. No. And some people are drinking the 9 ounces, right?
Right.
So they're basically downing half a bottle of wine.
Half bottle. Right. Half bottle. Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah. I do. I mean, it's funny and sad at the same time.
Right.
Let's get to our first topic today, or we could just keep riffing. Our first topic today was the antioxidant myth. Because we were talking about this earlier, that we assume that people know that just shoveling antioxidants into your mouth is really not going to serve you. But that's doing people a disservice, because there's so much confusing information and conflicting information out there. Like, you need antioxidants, take your vitamin C, take your vitamin E, take your glutathione, take all this stuff. And I feel that there's a fundamental, first of all, misunderstanding among people about how antioxidants work in the body, how this is a chain that recycles itself. Like, that's like, you shouldn't have to just continually add to the chain, to that cascade, if you're doing things right. So I'd love you to touch on that. And also, vitamin E is another one of my biggest pet peeves, because again, people get led down the garden path. They don't understand that vitamin E is actually 8 different compounds. And if you're going to supplement with vitamin E, then you've got to do it with the whole thing, the alpha tocopherols, the beta tocopherols, like all of the different tocopherols. There was that big study on smokers that they said, oh, vitamin E causes cancer. Well, that's because they were only supplementing with 1 vitamin E.
Right.
So I'm going to shut up now because I'm talking too much, but let's talk antioxidants.
Yeah. You know, I think there is the myth that everybody just needs a lot of antioxidants. And remember that the reason you need antioxidants is because there's something probably wrong. Our bodies are so well designed. Honestly, they are so well designed. And they're really designed so as your body's making ATP, and going through this, you know, oxidative phosphorylation pathway and making ATP, there's this oxidative stress that's created, and it's created purposefully because the body is designed for this little bit of oxidative stress to move on and stimulate healing and recovery. What goes awry is when the oxidative stress is, you know, overwhelms the system. So something went wrong at the very base level to create so much oxidative stress that our body couldn't deal with it. And some of those things are out of our control. Our environment is dirty and messy, right? Our food is not as good as it used to be. So there are things that are out of our control. And hence, we probably do need some antioxidants anymore to help that, because it's hard to be perfect. It's hard not to go breathe bad air. But I do think the problem is that people are overlooking that the reason that they have so much oxidative stress needs to go back a step. And we need to look at what happened in screwing up that oxidative phosphorylation pathway that was creating too many free radicals.
Right.
And maybe go back and fix that. So we may be looking a layer too far up, and we have to go down a further layer. In my whole mastermind group where we're studying cellular medicine, we're really going very, very back to what is going wrong at the base levels. And the next step up, where there's too much oxidative stress, let's just throw antioxidants into the system, probably is now not addressing why there's too much oxidative stress. That said, we know that right now we can't fix everything. And so some antioxidants are good, but you're right. Too many, now you've blocked all the oxidative stress and you actually aren't going to get some of the healing things that occur when oxidative stress is elevated a little bit. So the body relies on a little bit on stress. We all know this when we work out, right? And so you go work out. One of the ways you rebuild is by having this little bit of oxidative stress so that your body kicks into gear. And so if you go work out and then you come back and you just shovel down all your vitamins, you actually just undid a lot of your ability to build lean muscle.
Right.
Because you've actually blocked some of that oxidative stress that's necessary for the rebuild. So I think that that's where the myth lies. And when you talk about vitamin E, for instance, even within, you know, when you're doing a full spectrum vitamin E, there are people who genetically don't do well with a lot of vitamin E. So genetics and epigenomics play a huge role here as well that we have to kind of go back to, right? That some people do horribly with vitamin E, even if you're doing a full spectrum. So there is a big genetic piece to these things too. Remember that when you get this oxidative stress, what happens is it stimulates the mitochondria to produce these mitochondrial peptides. Mitochondrial peptides go and they code the nucleus to do certain things. for instance, MOD-SC, which I think you talked about a little bit in your mitochondrial talk, you know, is a really important mitochondrial peptide for helping with metabolism and helping with weight loss and helping with energy. Well, if you don't produce any MOD-SC because you have no oxidative stress, then you're actually going to have a much harder time losing weight, building muscle. So there's this very fine line. And I know a lot of people who are taking tons of antioxidants every single day, and they think they're so, so healthy.
Yeah.
So I think a lot, you know, and you and I do this a lot with everything we do, right? We cycle through things.
Absolutely.
We don't continuously do something. You have to look at things, doing them cyclically, so that you keep the body in a stable state, you know, more of a homeostatic state. But I also think people need to go back to looking at, and we'll be talking as time goes on, I think more and more of how do we go back a step below to correct the pathways that created too much oxidative stress, as opposed to just throwing more antioxidants into the system.
Absolutely. And you actually brought something up that I forgot to mention at the beginning, that the SSRP Mastermind, which I had the pleasure of sitting in on last month, and virtually, I was the fly on the wall. That was me. One of the many flies on the wall. And we can talk a little bit about the Mastermind program, actually, because it was so fascinating to me to see this incredible group of physicians come together in a room, and some people like you and Dr. Turner and some of the other physicians that have been working with peptides a little bit longer. But what's happening is that you don't always see, and I actually had a conversation with Dr. Turner earlier this week, and she was commenting on this, where you have and people become fellows. So you have this fellowship, you have this group of physicians coming from all different walks of practice. Mm-hmm. And some of them are medical doctors, some are chiropractors, like you've got different degrees of physicians in there, and collaborating together and working, going at the cell and the redox pathways and all of the different pathways that are happening in the cell, being guided by Dr. Seeds, who's, you know, he's the man.
Yeah, brilliant, right?
brilliant guy. And everybody's sitting there rolling up their sleeves going, okay, so what's happening here? And how's this going? And he's got like this incredible insight. But even then, it's when you get this big group of practitioners coming together, bringing different situations to light and different cases, really, mm-hmm. and collaborating on figuring out these solutions and how do we use these new tools that we have, like peptides or whatever the case may be, to solve for X.
Yeah. It's been an amazing experience, honestly, you know, life-changing for my practice and for me. You know, the SSRP Mastermind is 25 of us are kind of the mastermind fellows who get together. We're still meeting in person, well, socially distanced,
but still meeting in person,
you know, and to have 25 people just interacting and talking about things has been so huge and so beneficial in terms of finding new ways to treat patients. But we are really changing, you know, functional medicine, because we went from disease focused, right, to organ system focused, and that was functional medicine. Well, now we're realizing that was too shallow, that we need to go next layer down, away from organ system focused to cell focused. What mm-hmm. goes wrong at the cellular level that creates the organ system failure, that creates the disease? And once you actually get down to the cell level, fixing, for instance, talking about the whole redox pathway and the whole correcting that within the mitochondria, I'm a big believer that once we actually fix that, we're going to get rid of obesity and cancer and dementia. And so you don't even have to now focus on, okay, it's the brain, it's the amyloid plaque. You go back the next layer down. We're going to be solving these problems. And I think in a relatively, you know, hopefully relatively soon, mm-hmm. you know, it's complex, but honestly, once you get down to that cellular level, and Dr. Seeds, I mean, most people do not have his brain. I always tease because they always have me eat on the questioning, because I think he talks so up here that, like, you know, we're all trying to, you know, I have to go home for 5 hours and research everything he said because it's so far above me. So they always have me sitting there on the questions. So I'm like the interpreter. I'm like, well, I think what he's saying.
Make it into English for us, please.
Yeah. but he's brilliant, and he's really understands this stuff at such a different level than anybody out there. So I think we're going to get to the answer of a lot of these things. And once you solve a lot of these problems, I mean, we're talking about weight loss, but weight loss is no different in terms of a mitochondrial disorder, really, or a disorder in metabolism in the metabolic pathways, then its next step, which is cancer, which is why obesity is associated with higher risk of COVID, higher risk of cancer, higher risk of dementia, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why is obesity associated with all of these underlying diseases? Is because something is getting screwed up at a very base level.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. And the way I describe it to my clients is if you can get the early, it's like looking at a domino chain, right? If you, the further up the chain you can get the dominoes to start falling, and even if they stop at some point, your body will have solved a whole bunch of problems you thought you had to solve. And now you're like, okay, here's the next thing. And so where's the next thing we have to kind of address? And it's in many ways, by going at it at the cell, to me, it's you're tapping into the body's wisdom. And
yeah,
it
exactly.
may sound a bit woo, but the bottom line, and I think you said this earlier, the human body is a work of freaking magic, right? Because even obese people, even people with cancer, even people who are like crazy broken, their bodies are still performing millions upon millions of chemical process every second of every hour of every day so that they can breathe and walk and talk and function
right.
to any degree.
Right. No, I mean, we really are such an intricately well-designed system, you know, and the body tries so, so, so hard to fix things and we keep, you know, screwing it up. And then sometimes our answers, because we are unfortunately still treating it maybe a level that's too far down the domino chain, right?
Mm.
That if I, you know, by the time I've changed that domino on the last, you know, the third from the last domino to fall over, well, there's a lot of damage already done. We got to go back to that first domino level. But you're right. The body is incredibly well designed. If we can go back to fixing the very base level, it's going to fix itself. It's going to be able to do this stuff. So this, you know, this is going to be the answer to a lot of diseases, beginning with obesity, because obesity is a root, is the thing that starts off obesity, right, is a metabolic dysfunction.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a metabolic disorder, you know, created by potentially not exercising and not eating well, but a lot of other things too.
Yeah.
You and I talked a little bit beforehand about, you know, just inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the big links to obesity is inflammation. Now you could say, okay, well, obesity causes inflammation, which is true, but inflammation also causes obesity. So if I have somebody who's in a very inflamed state, you know, for multiple reasons that they have, you know, from genetic reasons, right? Or so they're on that borderline autoimmune spectrum, or from not sleeping and so never having deep sleep and never having this kind of cleanup phase, or from constantly throwing toxic elements into my system and I'm inflamed, I can take that person who has high levels of inflammation. So we'll measure, you know, in my clinic, things like myeloperoxidase, just show, you know, some endothelial dysfunction, endothelial inflammation, you know, looking at CRP, which may be, you know, high sensitive CRP, looking at those things. If somebody's in an inflamed state and I say, well, let's just, you know, change your diet and everything else. Well, first thing I've got to do is get rid of that inflamed state. And sometimes changing the diet does it. And sometimes you have to, you have to go back and say, okay, what else am I missing here that's causing this inflamed state? Sometimes it starts at that sort of T cell humoral immunity level.
It's the immune system.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's the immune system.
Yeah. Right.
So when we talk about weight loss peptides, I think we forget a little bit about, hey, one of the places you may need to start is actually fixing the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of times if I have somebody who comes to me and they're, you know, I can't lose weight. We'll actually start with some of the very basic peptides like thymosin alpha 1, which is an immune modulating peptide.
Yeah.
And we don't think about thymus and alpha one in weight loss, right? It's not, if you read all your peptide articles, you know,
on
weight loss, thymus and alpha one doesn't appear. And yet it may be my starting point for a lot of these people who come in with obviously immune dysfunction. And how do I know them? They've got arthritis in multiple joints, right? Well, that's immune disorder that, you know, or they're frequently getting viral illnesses. You know, mm-hmm. those are people who have a dysfunction at the immune level, the T cell level and B cell level. And so you pull in thymus and alpha one and you may just do nothing but thymus and alpha one for an 8-12 week course. Try and get immunity better and then start adding on some of the other things. I think that gets forgotten a lot. We think about our big fancy peptides for weight loss.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about, you know, AOD or MODSC, things like that. But a lot of our patients, we will do nothing except 12 weeks of thymus and alpha-1, get their immune systems healthy and then start focusing. And a lot of times simply with that,
and clean up their diet, right?
Clean up their diet, right. Clean up their diet, get them on thymus and alpha-1.
Yeah.
And that may be all they need.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, and that's interesting, right? So thymus and alpha-1, the weight loss peptide you never thought of.
Right. Right. I would say there's, you know, when people always say, well, what's your favorite peptide? I mean, thymus alpha-1 is always our go-to peptide as our starting thing, no matter what disease process you have, because underlying, you know, immune dysfunction is creating a lot of disorders.
Yeah, no, that's so clever and smart and true. So thymus and alpha-1, and by modulating the immune system, it's obviously going to maybe normalize the oxidative stress that's happening in the body, right? Like just
right.
Body's not
so
in this
gonna start
crazy
correcting it, right.
reactive
right.
state. Yeah. And I would say that myself, one of the things that I've used that's been very helpful for people, and it flies under the radar on a lot of people's radars, in part because North America is slow to come to understand it, is molecular hydrogen. We were talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting about molecular hydrogen is it's a selective antioxidant. And so somehow right. this tiny mm-hmm. little molecule seems to, and I asked one of the researchers about it once, and he said something about a weak bond. And so it's only going to be able to go after certain types of oxidative damage. And so, or maybe it was a strong bond. I can't remember. It had something to do with the bonds, because I'm like, really, we're talking about a molecule. It has no brain. You can't convince me it has a brain. I'm not buying it. So it's something in the chemistry of molecular hydrogen that seems to, and it's amazing to me. I had one client come to me with really bad arthritis in an ankle. And all I did is, interestingly enough, I got him to stop drinking. Like he came in telling me he was having 30 drinks a week, which means he was probably having 50.
Yeah, 60, right?
Right, exactly.
Yep.
So we stopped booze. He did molecular hydrogen and I got him drinking lemon water in the morning. And within 2 weeks, he sent me an email and said, I don't know if it's my imagination, but I think I can walk better. And within a month, it had completely, it was almost at the point where I'm like, shit, I'm going to put myself out of work.
Yeah, right. Just with this one thing.
Just this, and that was even before I knew about thymus and alpha-1, right? Like it was just this
right.
low
just using a very hanging, basic.
Super
and
basic.
Again, a very, very specific, like you said, a selective antioxidant so that now the body just can get back to doing what it is supposed to do. So, you know, I love that, right? Because the problem with most antioxidants is they're not very selective. And, you know, so that's where you can get things screwed up. So taking a very selective antioxidant, molecular oxygen, you and I were talking about spermidine, you know, it also may have the same kind of benefits. It's working at a level below where a lot of the antioxidants are to try and selectively correct this whole pathways. And then you take that gentleman and, you know, you get him out of this oxidative stress, you get him stopping drinking. Now, what does he do? He starts walking, right?
Yeah.
So he's walking, which he couldn't do before because his arthritis was so bad. And he starts losing weight because he's also moving.
Yeah.
So, right. You get these people feeling a little bit better with some very simple approaches. And now you can start moving a little bit. So I think that lots of times when you know, I read these peptide articles on weight loss, and what's forgotten is that, you know, that, yeah, you can throw all these fancy things in, you still got to go back to the very basics.
Yeah.
And the fancy things are fun, but, you know.
No, they're totally fun. And, you know, you get a peptide even like setmelanotide, where I find it's really helpful with people who have dysregulated hunger signals.
Uh-huh.
So they're hungry all the time. And so
right.
setmelanotide as a derivative of the whole melanocortin thing.
Yeah, melanocortin peptides, yeah.
It helps to curb hunger. Which
right.
you don't always want to do, because I'm always very wary of curbing someone's hunger in the sense that, you know, am I going to cause some kind of dysfunction or reliance on this? But
right.
sometimes in the short term, to get them on that low glycemic diet, that's going to help them to so that their blood sugar is more balanced, so that they're not constantly
right.
starving.
So they're not constantly wanting to eat, right?
Exactly. Like, and so, you know, it's funny, the MOTC is, I mean, it's, to me, it's more of a heavy hitter for you guys when you're seeing there's a fundamental issue in the mitochondria and we somehow have to give it a kickstart.
Right.
Like give it back a dose of its own medicine somehow.
Sometimes I find that MOTC, when you talk, like for instance, the gentleman you were talking about, I have these patients who come in who really trying to get them exercising because they're either so obese or have so much arthritis, trying to get them exercising, which is so important, is difficult, right? And so mm-hmm. sometimes I do find MOTC because really, remember, it's acting as almost an exercise mimetic.
Right.
It's doing almost the same thing in your body that exercise does. So I will pull it in sometimes at an early stage to kind of act that way from a metabolic stimulant to act as that exercise mimetic until you can get people So you can use it kind of early in the chain until you get people moving a little bit more and getting used to moving and getting used to doing a little bit more exercise. So you can, even though it is kind of a heavy hitter, you can use it a little bit earlier stage in the game, especially in those people who really, it is just still too uncomfortable for them to really get out and exercise at a level. We'd love to think that modesty is the whole answer to exercise, but it does do, you know, it does do a lot in terms of, you know, when you look at least the mice, right, studies, the mouse studies on it, the mice put on modesty had the equivalent of actually running on a treadmill for an hour. And so it does have some pretty significant benefits in terms of acting as that exercise mimetic. And so it can be used for that purpose in those patients who just can't get to exercise, although there's not any substitute for just moving.
No, but to your point, for someone who physically can't giving
right.
them a leg up, like, what are you going to do? Punish them until they do?
Right, exactly.
You know, at some point, you're here mm-hmm. really to help people to overcome whatever hurdles are in front of them. And depending on right. how serious their case is, you're going to have to dig into that bag of tricks a little bit deeper to help them in a way that is maybe not natural, but that's the whole point of them coming to you in the first place. If they could just go out for a walk, mm-hmm. they would have. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's why weight loss is so complex is really because there's so many different, and it's hard. I mean, it's probably one of the hardest things in my practice when people just, I can't lose weight.
Oh, I know.
You know, right. They're really hard. And sometimes you have to keep the dialogue. And if you believe them, they seem to be eating really well. They seem to be exercising. They're still not losing weight. And I think that's a large number of the patients you and I see, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially women, they come to you and they're so stuck.
It's so sad.
Right. They're just so stuck and they can't lose, you know, they can't lose fat. And obviously, first thing we want to do is get their hormones stabilized, right? We want to make sure the thyroid's optimal. We make sure the progesterone, estrogen, testosterone are optimal. You want to start there. But once you've corrected that, you know, usually, I dropped a few pounds. I'm still stuck. I'm still not losing fat mass. I'm still not building lean muscle. So, you know, so then what do we do next? Well, you and I just talked about, we want to look back at, okay, what could be causing you? You know, are you sleeping? What else is causing this inflamed state? Mm-hmm. But once you've corrected all that, what do you do? I think that, you know, one of the first line things that we always think about is when you think about drop of hormones that relate to loss, to weight gain over age, it's your IGF levels dropping, right? So growth hormone levels dropping. And we know that 15% drop in growth hormone every year as we get older is really substantial in terms of weight.
Yeah.
So I do think replacing growth hormone using the growth hormone secretagogues like CJC and Ipamorelin is where I kind of go to as my next step in these people.
Yeah.
And that lots of times is really all, when we think about our hormones, we always think about testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, you know, thyroid, but we forget about growth hormone. And mm-hmm. and it's still is such a big player, particularly for weight loss. I mean, Tesamorelin is one of the few, you know, peptides that actually has FDA approval for weight, for, you know, visceral fat loss. Mm-hmm. So we know that these actually do work for fat loss, that raising IGF does help with fat loss. So that's kind of, you know, we forget about growth hormone in that sort of sequence, but that's usually once I've gotten rid of inflammation and you've gotten all the other hormones corrected, my next step oftentimes is to go to the growth hormone secretagogues using CJC and Ipamorelin. Lots of times I'll use them more times a day as opposed to just, you know, we always think about using them just at bedtime to help with deep mm-hmm. sleep and help get that growth hormone surge. But lots of times for weight, I'll use them more frequently. You know, remember, you can use a little bit higher dose, for instance, if you have enough time in between. The key is you don't want to saturate the receptor, so you can't use a big whopping dose at one time. But you can use smaller doses of CJC, Ipamorelin more frequently mm-hmm. to get a bigger effect. You need to have at least a 3-hour window in between. So I'll have people do that potentially a couple times a day before their workouts. I'll have them do a little injection. I'll have them do it at bedtime. And sometimes, like with our sort of bodybuilder clan, you know, sort of as they're getting into their really leaning phase, we'll even have them do it maybe 3 times a day.
First thing in the morning sometimes?
Yeah.
Fasted? Yeah. And is there, because I heard somewhere also, I was talking to someone, they were talking about for people who are trying to build mass to use it post-workout. Because
you get that surge and you get that muscle pump. So I think for fat loss, oftentimes using a pre-workout and then if you're really trying to really build muscle, using a post-workout injection, you know, and if you have enough time in between, you can actually do both, but you need to just have a long workout.
I mean, some people do that. I'm in the world now. I've got a Carol bike. I've got a heavy band system. And so my workouts are super short and super
which honestly, right, we are learning you don't need to do 3-hour workouts, and mm-hmm. if there may be some detriment to 3-hour workouts, I was talking to a patient yesterday who is, she's a trainer and she works out with her clients when she's doing these classes. And so she's working out 4 hours a day and she's actually getting fatter and fatter. And, her body's getting more and more inflamed. She's just more inflamed and more stressed. I go, you got to back off. She's doing a 16-hour fast and she's cramming all of her protein into like her one meal. And I said, yeah, this isn't working for you. And she's frustrated because she's stuck with this 23% body fat. And I said, you got to back off. So we do that whole overtraining piece. Mm-hmm. And again, I think as we're looking at one of the things that when I was talking to her, when we're looking at a lot of us who are doing these 16-hour fasts, which mm-hmm. you and I talked about when we were talking about the whole circadian rhythm things, is if we're trying to build muscle and we need a fair amount of protein, remember, we can't absorb 100 grams of protein in one sitting.
No.
And so we have these people now who are trying to eat in these very small windows and yet get enough protein for lean muscle building. It becomes a little tricky, right?
Well, and they're trying to do it every day, right? I think this whole, and we've talked about this before, this whole idea of pulsing. So we mm-hmm. cycle our supplements, but even with diet variation, like when you have a high protein day and a low protein day and you vary your workouts based on your inputs and helping people to understand, like, the problem is that many people work better with routine. They're like, just tell me what to do. And then they just rinse and repeat every single day. And I get that because they're building.
I get that too. I'm real guilty of that too, right? It's much easier for me to eat the same thing every single day and do my workout at the same time. And you're right. And that routine to some extent is good, but our bodies do thrive on to caveman days, right?
We adapt.
Not the way our bodies work. We had stressful days and we had relaxed days. And we had days, the old cavemen had the days they were hunting all day and, going at it and they didn't eat all day until they got food. And then the next day, everybody's sitting around enjoying meals. And so we have to always go kind of think back to where genetics sort of started and that variation is really good. So you're right that you're doing a harder workout day and you have to get more protein in those days. And those days may be the days when you want to do shorter fast periods, So those are all kind of techniques that you have to look at when you're looking at weight loss and lean muscle building is that 16-hour fasting, great, but that may not work on those days when you're trying to build more lean muscle.
And also shifting the eating window. And people are very resistant to this for very good reason. But I think we've talked about this before, is really if we want to fast and we even want to intermittent fast, eating first thing in the morning, having that big meal in the morning, your next big meal at lunch, and then tapering your food so that by 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, you're done, right? That's what really entrains the circadian rhythm properly. Mm-hmm. And for women, I think starting the day with protein can be a really good thing. It's being open to shifting things around. The problem with that is then you don't get to have dinner with your family.
Right. It doesn't work for a lot of people, right?
Which totally sucks, right? I think Dr. Mercola talks about, I can do this because I have no life. I'm single. I'm like, well, that's super awesome for you.
Right. It doesn't fit with our society. It doesn't fit with going out and enjoying a meal with friends. It doesn't fit with, socialization. Interesting, when I was giving my circadian rhythm talk, it is interesting when you talk about that first thing in the morning it might not be actually that first thing in the morning. It looked like the eating window was maybe more of actually starting around 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And that may be a morning for some people, but I wake up at 4 in the morning. So a morning for me after I finish my workout is 6 in the morning, and that may actually not be the ideal time to protein. It looked like in the circadian clock that the ideal window to eating was somewhere kind of from the 11 o'clock to maybe 6 o'clock time was actually maybe the ideal window. And then after 6, I'm sure it's a little different for different people. And that's probably something we're going to have to sort of figure out is what is your eating window? But I do think, and you and I talked about this, it's very hard to be perfect. And you're going to have to look at a little bit of, how can I do my best given my lifestyle, given that, I do want to have some interaction with my family or my friends. I don't want to always go, sit at dinner and drink my coffee. So, I do think there's this piece, but it is interesting that the new stuff, looking at this kind of circadian clocks and what is the best time for everything from taking your meds to having surgeries.
Right.
That it was very funny. One of my partners at my orthopedic practice, somebody will listen to this circadian clock talk I had given, and I was talking about, the best metabolic window and the best window to surgery. And, I said, okay, these are the best times for surgery. And some of my partner, a good friend of mine, who's my foot and ankle surgeon at my practice, my orthopedic practice. And he said, damn it, Betsy, a bunch of people listen to your podcast and now everybody wants to have their surgery at this time. And I can't do everybody's surgery at this time.
There's only one of me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so we do the best we can.
I think the big takeaway from that, though, is basically being willing to play, being open to understanding that you can't be rigid about this stuff. And I've had success with people eating earlier in the day sometimes, especially people who aren't getting enough calories. And this is the other thing that you find. And, you know, I think what we're really talking about here, we're talking about weight loss, but we're not talking about weight loss. We're talking about muscle building. And so weight loss will happen as a side effect, right? You will replace that with muscle. Muscle's more metabolically active. It's going to be easier to keep the fat off if you build muscle. Like, we all know those stories. But this idea that I get a ton, and again, mostly in women, but even men, people aren't eating enough. And so they're kind of starving themselves, and their body is going into this weird sort of, not to overuse the word, lockdown, where A, they're eating the wrong things, but on top of that, they're not getting enough food physically, because they're restricting themselves to these tiny little eating windows. And to your point, you can only eat so much. And then,
especially protein, right? And absorb the protein within a certain window, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, and I guess when I was in school, they taught us, the body cannot absorb more than 30 grams of protein at a sitting. And I think that that's been kind of debunked. I don't know what it depends what journal you're reading on what day.
Right.
One thing I know for sure is that most of the people I deal with, and I'm sure you see this in your practice all the time, is their digestion is not optimized. And most people I see need to be taking digestive enzymes and of some degree. I don't know how you feel about that, but.
Yeah. I think actually that's very interesting. There's one of the gals, the docs in Mastermind, who actually runs a clinic that is very big into ALS. And we were talking about diseases. And one of her beliefs is a lot of stuff actually starts with, you know, a dysfunction at the biliary tract level, and that digestive enzymes, she uses them kind of first line with everything, because, you know, unless you have adequate lipases and, you know, the bile acids, that's one of the starts. She said almost every, if you look at people who have gallbladder disease, they have much higher incidence of dementias and things like that. So maybe this whole digestive dysfunction may be the start of a lot of problems. And I think in obesity too, that may be a big issue, is that a lot of people don't have good digestive enzymes. And so I do think that's a place to start too, that we overlook, is actually throwing a little, you know, digestive enzymes into the mix, so that when you're eating, you're taking your digestive enzymes along with it until you can kind of get your gut corrected.
Yeah. Well, and think of it, the way I explain it is you build up these micronutrient deficiencies, and the body is MacGyver, right? The body is going to deal with whatever you throw at it, and whatever you give it, it's going to cope. But the wall that you're going to build, if you want to think of the things that the body builds as a wall, there's going to be holes, because there's going to be certain parts missing. And the wall is not going to have the integrity that it would have if it had all the pieces. And eventually,
something's
going to go wrong.
It's going to explode.
So, so back to our muscle building, fat burning world. So we're addressing inflammation. We're addressing oxidative status without overdoing it. We're bringing in, you said your first line of defense really is the growth hormone secretagogues, like that whole area, so that we improve. We also improve sleep, which we know is so important.
Right.
You're raising up growth hormone. And then what's the next one? I think we've got a little zinger in here that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So I think the big fancy things are always the things that people think about are, you know, like AOD, and, you know, whether AOD is a great fat loss peptide is still a little bit questionable. It appears to work really well in some people and not really well in other people.
Why do you think that is?
And I think there must be a huge, I think it's two things. I think lots of times it's very underdosed. It's expensive to actually dose it at the dose that I think really works with fat loss. So we tend to actually kind of probably underdose it a little bit, just because it's such a pricey peptide to use at its full dose. I think some people need a whole lot of it. I mean, obviously it works amazing in mice. It only works amazingly in about 3% of the population. But what I found is if you dose it a bit higher in people, you can actually get pretty good results in most people for fat loss, but it can take a lot. So it becomes almost cost prohibitive in a lot of people.
Like as much as tessimerellin?
And
tessimerellin, if you think about it, they dose pretty, is what, 2 milligrams a dose, right?
One and a half
to 2 milligrams a dose.
Yeah. Yeah. It can get into pretty much a similar cost range. Yes.
Okay.
And some people, I mean, you know, when you actually really pump the dose up on it. So then I think, you know, one of the things I'm starting to really look back at is a peptide hormone that we used 15 years ago before all these other fancy stuff was available, just oxytocin, right? And wow. And we use oxytocin a lot for kind of mood disorders and stimulating sex drive, particularly in women. You know, I would use it in people who are just kind of chronically depressed or just really shy or antisocial. But we now know it may be one of the biggest pieces for anabolic effect of weightlifting and for building not just muscle, but lean muscle, losing fat. So oxytocin, which we know is really safe, really well tolerated, not super expensive, and has a tremendous number of benefits. There's studies that basically show that even the anabolic effect of using some of the very, very anabolic hormones actually may be their induction of oxytocin. So that may not be the anabolic hormone itself as much as its promoting effect on increasing oxytocin production. And so you can use oxytocin post a workout. You can use a little bit of it every day because it has tremendous effects on the brain as well. So it improves dopamine. So you just feel a little bit happier. Your mood is a little bit better. You're a little
Everybody
bit more social.
Everybody can use that these days.
You know, yeah. I remember listening to Terry Hertog talk about oxytocin. And he said, he goes, oh, I always have a little oxytocin nasal spray. And when I have to go see a really horrible patient, I always do a little bit of it before I go in and see the patient because it makes me like them more. You know, I mean, he always gave this story about, you know, you could actually take a couple that had fallen out of love and just have them both do oxytocin and they would fall back in love. I mean, oxytocin has tremendous benefits on the brain just for our mood, for wow. liking other people, you know, but it is very anabolic for muscle and for bone. So it's tremendously beneficial for your women, but men as well, who have started to lose bone density. And I'm seeing women, you know, a lot of women, especially your endurance athletes and people like that who have low bone density in their 30s already. So wow. here's a really nice, safe way. We don't have great anabolic bone building agents. Really about the only one we have right now is Forteo. And it's expensive and it's hard to get approved. So this is a really good anabolic bone building agent. But we know also that it really stimulates some of the receptors in the brain that actually, you know, without doing anything else, it actually will promote fat loss. So we have kind of the perfect peptide hormone here.
No kidding.
We feel happier. Our mood eating is not, so we're not now eating out of feel, you know, because it makes us feel happy and we want to feel better. So we're stuffing our mouths full of, you know, cookies that make us just happier, at least temporarily, because of that dopamine effect. And it's stimulating anabolic muscle mass. It's stimulating fat loss and it's stimulating bone production with very little risks or downsides. In fact, to date, even at very, very high doses of oxytocin, we can't really see that there's any kind of bad effects. There was one article that talked about people who actually have people who have hypersexual, that you can make them worse in some people if they do massive doses. So if you have these people who are kind of the sexual dysfunction on the hypersexual side, you might make them worse. But there's not that many of those people you see. In fact, particularly in women, we see a lot more on the opposite side, right?
Kidding. Yeah.
You know, with low desire. And so to me, it might be the perfect hormone. And you can do it a little bit of every day to help the kind of the brain and help with appetite control. But then you do a bigger dose. You know, doses are going to vary a lot between people, but you can do a bigger dose right after the workout and get actually really nice, rapid anabolic effect from your workouts. So I think to me, this is a hormone we need to really be looking back at. And again, I used to use oxytocin a ton as a nasal spray. You can use it as a troche, but it's probably best for weight. It probably is. You can do it as a troche on a daily basis or for improving sex drive, but probably for post-workout, it works best as a sub-Q injection.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, and also even with the nasal spray, I mean, nasal spray is great when you're giving it to someone just for those social situations, because you don't want somebody going into a party to be poking themselves with a needle in the back.
Right.
That just gives off the wrong vibe altogether. You know, a little.
Well, unless you hang out with people like us, you know, like us.
And, well, yeah. There's people like us. And then
completely normal.
Exactly. Ooh, what are you doing today?
So everybody in my house does peptides, right? Like Thymosin Alpha 1, even my 14-year-old kid. You know, it gives himself little injections every day. And sometimes I'll have like somebody over at the house and all of a sudden Jason will pull a needle out of the refrigerator and stick himself with it. And people are like, oh my God, what's going on in this house? Jay's probably not a good idea to be sticking needles in yourself when we have company.
I've got these things all over the place.
That's right.
I know. They're everywhere. I've I filled up my box. I've got to take it. I'm just
like, oh my God. I know. Whenever we travel, I think, what do the maids think about us, right? That we like, I literally have a hotel room full of needles.
Actually, that's an interesting point. And we'll get back to oxytocin in a minute because I think it's, you're going to become the oxytocin queen. You know that.
Yeah.
Two podcasts, nobody's talking about oxytocin except for you. So
yeah. Yeah.
But look at
it. Don't you think it really has been kind of, I think, overlooked. You're right.
Nobody talks about it.
Nobody talks about it anymore. And it used to be one of the few things we had to use. So we did actually talk about it. And it fell off the wagon, you know, which happens with so many of the things we do, right? It's like you go back and you go, oh, wait, that actually was really good. You know,
and we got distracted by the shiny things. So as a nasal spray though, don't you think you need a higher like for me, I find with any peptide that you're using, I mean, there's not that many you can use as a nasal spray, but the ones that you can, you end up needing like 4 or 5,
you need a higher dose,
the dose So from a cost effective perspective, you can kind of get over the needle thing. That's the way to go.
Agree.
Yeah,
no, I agree that it's always probably better to do something as a sub Q injection and more cost effective to do it that way. I do still have a few people who just are needle reluctant. They just don't want to be sticking needles to themselves. And it amazes us because we're so used to it but you can teach them all day long and they're just like, I'm just not going to do it. So I do find in some people, this is a peptide that, you know, unlike there's a lot of peptides we can't use as nasal sprays. This is one that we can. So it is an option to go to if you do need that kind of weight loss peptide. When you start looking at things that potentially that aren't injections for people who find that distasteful to, you know, and there are, like, you know, our world that seems, oh my God, who doesn't want to
listen, I was very needle phobic when I started this whole thing.
And you got around it and
you get over it. You really do. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's okay. We have to meet.
Right. We work with the people. Right? Yeah.
That's all we can do. So oxytocin, today's big win. So AOD 9604, it's interesting that you talked about that one because so many people have given up on it.
Right.
As a weight loss, they talk about it more for joint regeneration.
For joint regeneration, right.
With the is it the pentosan polysulfate? Or
pentosan. So we use AODHA or AOD9064 with hyaluronic acid for joints. And then a lot of times we'll tie pentosan in as an injection they're giving themselves twice a week. At the same time, they're working on different pathways.
Okay. Yeah, which is a great point, right? It's like, why do you use a GHRP and a GHRH? Because they're going at the same problem through different pathways.
Right, different ways, right. Which is how you're going to have to address a lot of diseases, right? Is actually looking at different pathways that you want to affect.
Yeah.
It's not going to come down to always one pathway.
Totally. And I think that, you know, and we can actually even carry that back to our antioxidant system in that, when we look at people's genomics, like we look at their genetic reports and they have certain pathways are really well optimized and other ones aren't. And that becomes the value in some ways of looking at people's genetics, because you start to get some insight sometimes into, oh, it's not your this pathway that's blocked, it's this one. So you can become more strategic about how you support them in different ways.
Right.
In a way.
So yeah.
It's not just take more glutathione. Maybe actually what you need is, and for most people, you need more of the glutathione precursors and that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the AOD 9064, I do think, so my experience has been that when we've dosed it higher, we've been able to get an effect from it.
Interesting.
So it may be one of the ones because I was sort of like, nah, this doesn't really work, and kind of had stopped using it. And then I actually had a patient who said, wow, you know, actually when I just went higher on the dose, I did start losing weight. And it was a guy who we have a lot. I mean, he's been amazing. He's lost a ton of weight. He's really, and it was actually one of the things that really actually did help a ton, but he had to dose it pretty high. So it may well be that this has a dose dependent response for different people. And that, you know, in somebody who's struggling with weight loss, it may be one of the ones to kind of pull back in if they can afford it, but to try it to try increasing the dose. It's not a lot of downsides to increasing the dose, except to your pocketbook. You know, again, it's a very safe peptide. It's not going to do any harm except to lose money.
But you know, it's a trade-off, right? Eventually you'll, it'll come out in the wash. You feel better.
It is.
You're healthier. You'll make more money.
Is the idea
anyway. Okay.
We think of the preventative medicine realm.
Yeah.
But it still is hard sometimes to stomach the amount of money you're putting out for these peptides. And so it is a little bit of a balance, you know, and so it is one of the more expensive ones to kind of pull out. That said, I do think sometimes when you try some of those approaches and they're not working, it is one to kind of go back to and look at trying and maybe trying at a higher dose and seeing if it works for you. I still don't think it's probably going to work for everybody. I actually don't know that for sure, because I do have people who I just can't, they can't afford to go to that higher dose. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, a lot of people who, when we've updosed and have, who didn't respond to a smaller dose, did start responding to a higher dose of it.
Well, it's a bit like DSIP, right? When we were talking about in the last podcast, when so many people walk away from DSIP and they're like, it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't work for me. Right.
And it's, and with DSIP, it's playing with the time of day and playing with dosing.
Right. Exactly.
So you're really,
I think that's a tricky thing with a lot of peptides, right? Is that the doses are very, very, very variable depending on the person and probably their genetics and their metabolism. And so I do think lots of times it's like when we talk about oxytocin, what is the right dose? It, you know, might be 20 micrograms, it might be 100. It probably is very, very different depending on the person. And so lots of times it is an experimentation. And we tell people that. We're like, you know, let's try this. And we may want to have to go up. It's usually better to start low and work your way up. But with oxytocin, the worst thing that happens really, if you take too much of it, is that you just feel kind of like your head's on fire and, you know,
and it's little, not,
you know, and you get kind of hot and, you know, and red, and you sort of feel dizzy and you talk too much. But other than that, there really was, again, they couldn't really find any, even at high doses, much like BPC, even at high doses, they really couldn't find any kind of toxic effects to it. So it is one that you know, a small dose, that did nothing for me. Try a little bit higher dose on and see what happens. So there is a little bit of self-experimentation. And I always tell people, you know, it's where working with people like you or I sometimes is really helpful to kind of help people through that process, because you know, it's a combination of timing, dosing, using the right things at the right time. But that there's a lot of tools that probably get abandoned because they're either not dosed correctly or not dosed timing wise correctly. Yeah. And I think that oxytocin, maybe that fell into that realm a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And that's, I mean, I think that's fascinating. And you know, it's interesting with peptides that you see that variation in dosing and timing based on the individual, which really speaks to a compound that taps into the body's own system. It's not like a drug where it's like 100 milligram dose three times a day, and this is going to be the outcome kind of thing. Where the peptide, I mean, it's exogenous, but it's an endogenously compatible molecule that's working with your body's systems in a way.
Right.
And so depending on your particulars, you're going to need more or less at different times. I find that really interesting about peptides. I think it's kind of one of their superpowers in a way, right? Like
Agree. It's, you know, they are really very, I mean, it's what makes them so safe. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of very specificity to the body, their homeostatic effects and their specificity to the pathways they're affecting and to the person themselves. And, you know, and I do think that's where finding the right peptide for the right disease, for the right person is really as much an art as it is a science. And oftentimes a little bit of self-experimentation to figure that out because we do respond so differently. But I do think that little bit of specificity, that fine-tune that's so different from person to person, you know, in terms of every disease, including obesity, is one of the things that makes them so safe too, is because they are very, very specific.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, specific in some ways and pleiotropic in others, right?
You're right.
Because they act on the different systems. Like that's, again, it's the thing about peptides that sucked me in from the first day that I learned about them. I've never been able to step away from them since.
I know.
You keep learning more, and there's always something else that blows your mind on any given day.
It's amazing the things we can do.
Yeah.
With peptides, and again, starting with something as simple as fat loss and lean muscle building. So, you know, now we've kind of started, so we're going to, you know, get people uninflamed using diet, exercise, thymus and alpha-1, get their hormones all stabilized, including their IGF, using CJC and Ipamrelin. Tesamorelin, if you want to pull in the big guns, again, tesamorelin is expensive, but it for visceral fat loss, particularly seems to me, and you know, in my males, I find the tesamorelin works really well, probably because they are the ones who kind of put on that belly fat, that sort of beer belly, sometimes a little bit more than the women. And I found tesamorelin a little bit less tolerated sometimes in women. I don't know what your experience has been with that. A few more side effects with it sometimes, a few more edema.
I haven't used it. And personally, as you know, I can't tolerate CJC anyway.
Like, okay, right. So
I mean, they're one molecule apart. Like they're one amino acid.
So you probably wouldn't tolerate it, right? I find, and I don't tolerate tesamorelin. I do fine with CJC. I don't tolerate tesamorelin. because it causes way too much edema. You know, I start, you know, third spacing fluid, I get a lot of edema, you know, and the problem is maybe a smaller dose, but then you're actually wasting half of it because you've got to dilute it. So,
There's better ways to go. Yeah.
But I do find sometimes in my men with visceral fat who have that sort of belly, those men who have that kind of big fat belly, that tesamorelin really does work better than the CJC nipimarolin. But we are going to increase, we've got to stabilize growth hormone. So using IGF, particularly with the muscle building crowd, sometimes using it a little bit more frequently through the day. So now we've kind of hit those basics, right? We've gotten rid of the inflammation. We've corrected every single hormone, including growth hormone. We then correct, you know, add in something like oxytocin, which is working on the brain itself, but also to increase anabolic state. And unlike almost everything else we do that increases anabolic state, if you think about like the really, like when I'm working with my bodybuilders, the really anabolic things that we put them on almost always are bulking, right? They put on weight, but they put on weight. It's, you know, they're big, right? And that's not really a goal, particularly, you know, for people like us, women, they don't really want to get big. They want to get lean.
Get lean mass and functional mass. Yeah.
Right. And so oxytocin, the perfect, because it actually is what's, you know, those anabolics, maybe at least in, you know, in the studies that they've done in this dates back to some early studies, the oxytocin may be the what's causing those anabolic hormones to actually do what they're doing. So raising oxytocin, and we know it doesn't actually increase bulk. It increases lean muscle only. There's no downsides to it. So it might be a good choice for your kind of next go-to is to throw some oxytocin into the mix. And then when all that's not working, right? So you've reduced inflammation, you've corrected every hormone, we've thrown oxytocin into the mix, you know, then where do you go? So, you know, what is your kind of next steps there? And, you know, maybe that's where you start thinking about, okay, let's try a little MOD-SC, or we'll go to MOD-SC when the person maybe can't exercise.
Yeah.
Or things like 5-amino-1-MQ.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So 5-amino-1-MQ has advantages in that it, you know, it's working on that whole NAD, you know, pathway. So it definitely is improving metabolic state overall. And it's being pushed as an obesity drug. I mean, that's probably where it's going to potentially get its patent as an obesity drug. It's oral. So that's nice. You don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the
injections.
Few. Yeah.
So it's one of the few that's oral, right? It, again, I think to get really good effects from 5-amino-1-MQ, you have to dose it relatively high. So it does kind of fall into the pricier category.
Mm-hmm. I've heard like 50 to 150 milligrams a day.
Yeah. And I would say I have not seen 50 work all that well in a lot of people. I've found you typically have to go a little bit higher for fat loss. Okay. I do think it may in some people improve athletic performance at a little bit lower dose. So particularly on a kind of an acute effect, like to take it sort of acutely and then go, you know, do a run or something like that. It may have some kind of, you know, more acute benefits from that perspective. I found for weight loss, for fat loss, you have to go probably closer to that 150 realm, and it's pricey. I mean, it's a pricey thing to do.
Yeah. It's an expensive, compound for sure. What about, and this is we didn't even talk about this earlier, but you know, ketone esters keep coming up.
Yeah.
And what about using ketone esters, not for fat loss, because they don't make you burn fat. Like that's one of the big myths out there. But they do help to reduce inflammation, right? Like ketone bodies do have an anti-inflammatory effect on the body.
And well, huge.
Part of that kind of layer at the beginning as you're trying
to... Yeah, exactly. That was the point. You know, go back to that whole dysfunction in redox. That if we say everything starts with a dysfunction at the redox level, with this dysfunction of, you know, oxidative phosphorylation and normal ATP production... Well, one of the places ketone esters come in really well, and we talked about this in our cancer webinar last week, is correcting that. Mm-hmm. You know, that ketone esters are really key to helping get back normal oxidative phosphorylation pathways and not doing some of the bad things that happen when you break down normal oxidative phosphorylation, which is what cancer cells do. And they start using glycolysis and using glutamic acid to produce energy. Well, those are really detrimental pathways. And so ketone esters actually get you out of those bad pathways. So ketone esters are huge for reducing inflammation. They're huge anti-cancer agents, huge as an antiviral agent, because they're, when we talk about the thing we just talked about, which is treating at a very, very base level of cellular dysfunction, that's where ketone esters work.
Yeah.
You know, and so will they help with fat loss? I actually think they're disagree with you a little bit, respectfully, because there's a spectrum here, but I do think they can be helpful, because when you correct that whole oxidative phosphorylation pathway, you may get the metabolic state better, where people can burn a little bit of fat a little bit better if you do the other things along with it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know.
Yeah, I didn't mean that they don't help. I think they actually do help. They just don't help in the way that people think they help.
Right, right.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, especially when you're looking at some of these companies that are aggressively marketing, and they're more
marketing them as just as fat, just take these,
you know, and, yeah, get into ketosis and burn fat right away. And
burn
that's, to me, it's like, okay, you're misguiding people. First of all, when it comes to the ketone salts, it's really hard to get enough into your system without going into a total.
Yeah.
Salt overdrive, but
exactly. You really have to use ketone esters, and you know, which are pricey again. Now you're talking about a lot of money again, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was contacted by a ketone ester company last week, and they're sending me some stuff to try, and I'll be recording a podcast with them down the road. And he was saying that you don't need as much as people, at least unless you're in a disease state. So cancer notwithstanding, he was telling me that you don't need as much as people think you need. I'm going
to
try out his protocol
I'll be
for a little while and report back. Yeah.
When are you doing that podcast?
So I'm waiting to get the product. So I keep looking outside. Yeah. FedEx just came by. I'm like, ooh. So I'm going to give it a try, and then I'll probably, you know, try it for a couple of weeks and then record the podcast in a couple of weeks. So
yeah. Well, that'd be interesting. Because,
that'd be really interesting.
We're using them at relatively, you know, higher doses and,
yeah, and that makes sense.
It's pricey.
Yeah, it's $34 for a little bottle or something.
A little tiny bottle, exactly.
Well, that's what I said to him, because he approached me and I'm like, well, dude, like nobody can afford this. But actually, you don't need that much. And I'm like, huh, all right, well, show me. So
good.
But again, but talking about ketone esters again as acting lower down on the chain, understanding what is it going to do for you. And I think a big piece of it is acting on inflammation.
Right.
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 And getting your results that way. So I think that one of the things I'd love people to walk away from this podcast is understanding that, you know, in addition to managing the inflammation, it's about building muscle. The fat loss happens as a side effect of the building the muscle. And it doesn't mean you have to spend 3 hours a day in the gym. You just have to be smart about your workouts.
And
to your point, for the people who are really obese and really, you know, in a state where they, you know, they're not, like, let's face it, they're not going to start running or cycling or doing whatever. Just moving might help them. And then we've got these compounds that might help to give them a little lift beyond doing it all the work themselves, just to give them a little bit of a push over the hill kind of thing.
Yeah. I do think still there's a neglect to weightlifting for a lot of these people, right?
Oh,
Everybody
yeah.
still kind of pushes the cardio side of it. And
yeah.
I still have to do a lot of encouraging my people that, you know, even when you can't go out and run, you can actually lift weights, and lifting weights is still a really, really good way to build lean muscle and lose fat. And
absolutely.
And I think that still gets neglected a lot. And I have a lot of people that, you know, you actually don't need a ton of cardio. You know, you need a good sort of maybe 12 minutes of HIIT, but you don't need a ton of cardio to lose fat. And, you know, and by, you're right, by building that lean muscle, you're going to automatically start losing fat. And that's where, you know, again, getting adequate, just going back to your anabolic hormones is really helpful, right? Going
Absolutely.
Back to, you know, I still see a lot of women not taking testosterone, and, you know, that's huge, right, for muscle building. And then again, that's where oxytocin may come in really well too, because if you don't want to go on some of the big anabolics, you know, anabol and all those kinds of things, and that using oxytocin may be a really nice go-to for women, because it's going to make them feel better. It's going to increase their sex drive, which most women have poor sex drive, and it's going to help with that. So I think that's going to be a really good go-to on the muscle building too. And then obviously the IGF makes a huge difference in terms of building lean muscle. So those are all things that really do help, but I got to encourage, I still see tons of people who are reluctant to do, especially, you know, on a regular basis, doing weightlifting. They still
absolutely
emphasize cardio over weightlifting.
Yeah. What do you think of, so in, you know, in a world where many of us are getting shut out of gyms, it's getting harder to go to the gym. What do you think about people like bands, like I have these bands here.
Right.
That
you could do tons.
Right. And Yeah, like because I don't have a barbell. Right. I don't have room.
You could do right. You could do tons with bands and just body weight, right?
Yeah,
just body weight exercise using push-ups and dips and squats with body weight exercises, and then you add to that using your bands, right? You're doing a squat thrust overhead press using your bands. Huge. Yeah. You don't need and bands can do pretty heavy weight with bands.
Oh right? The ones here, some of them I can't even budge them.
Like, right, you can't do it. Right, you're right. So yeah, so to say I go to the gym and lift my big heavy dumbbells, and you can't even buy dumbbells online right anymore.
Along with toilet paper. So, yeah.
For a while, bands were really hard to find too. I'm sure they're going to go back into being tough to find too, because those were really sold out as well in the stores. I tried to buy a kettlebell and it was like nowhere to be found.
Right.
But if we're going back into this lockdown, and God forbid it doesn't get as bad as closing all the gyms again, I hope not. But you can still work out every single day with your bands and with your body weight exercises. And there's so much stuff online to help you do that now.
Absolutely.
You've got absolutely, absolutely, absolutely have to build muscle to lose the fat and to get lean. And it is something that, even my people who have horrible knees and horrible hips, there's so many easy, simple exercises that you can do using bands and using body weight exercises. They're not going to be traumatic to your joints. So it's such it's such a myth to me that I got to go out and, I can't do cardio, and so I'm not going to lose weight.
No.
You really don't need a lot of cardio.
Well, and the endurance cardio, quite frankly, at some point becomes catabolic. Like you lose muscle. Like look at an endurance runner. These guys are like, they're losing muscle mass. Like they can't keep it on.
They're my most unhealthy group of people, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I have a ton of them here in Boulder. They are my most unhealthy group because they are in such a catabolic inflamed state so often. And they have injuries that aren't getting better. And, I'm going out with one of my, I have a little ultra runner that I work with that, has a little pelvic. She's, 40 years old, maybe late 30s. She has a stress fracture in her pelvis and she doesn't do any weightlifting, and I'm like, I want you to back off, which is, they can't do. They're,
they're addicted, literally.
Yeah, right. But yeah, you're right. It's very catabolic. People think it's such a healthy thing to go out and run 100 miles. It's not a healthy thing to run 100 miles. It feels nice from a raising neurotransmitter level, so you feel very high after it, but it's not good for your body. And a lot of people, if you're spending 2 hours a day running, you don't have time for weightlifting as well. So if we really want to build lean muscle, you've got to go back to doing even simple weightlifting, but you've got to emphasize it, work with a good hormone doctor that gets your hormones, in order. Honestly, yeah. I see so many women who are either, overdosed or underdosed, on hormones. You've got to follow the hormones. You've got to follow metabolites of the hormones. We do hormone metabolites on all of our patients who are on hormones, because even if you just throw somebody on hormones, if you don't know where they're going, what pathways they're going down, it's very hard to know what you're doing with them. So I can't emphasize that as the first line defense before you even get to the peptides, to make sure the hormones are all corrected. If you have no testosterone as a woman or man, right?
Yeah. Good luck to you. And it's happening more and more in men, right?
Even more, right.
Yeah.
I would say at least 60% of the men, we have a lot of young males in our practice, a lot of young males, and most of them need to be on at least some dose of testosterone.
It's amazing. I had in the Facebook group yesterday, there was a 23-year-old guy saying, how much PT-141 do I need? My sex drive's on the floor. And I'm like, forget the PT-141, dude. Like, go get your hormones run.
Yeah, something's wrong with you if you're in your 20s and you have no sex drive, right?
PT-141.
It's not something PT-141 is going to fix, right? There's something else going on.
Exactly. I mean, and even if it did, it's a Band-Aid.
You're not fixing the underlying problem, right?
Yeah. Anyway, okay. I think we're going to have to bring this to a close. I'm sure you have somewhere to be. And we could keep talking for a really long time.
Forever, that's right.
So thank you again so much, Betsy, for being here today. I really appreciate it. I always so enjoy chatting with you. And
me too.
We'll have to we'll have to pick a new topic and do it again.
Perfect. All right.
All right,
Nelly. Stay safe. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode with Dr. Elizabeth Uhr from the Boulder Longevity Institute in Colorado. If you enjoyed this episode or you got value out of it, please, please, please leave us your review on iTunes or Google or Spotify or wherever you're listening to this podcast. And also send me your comments, send me your questions. I always love to hear from listeners. You can find me on my website at natnidham.com, or you can find me on Facebook by joining Biohacking Superhuman Performance Group, which is a private group on Facebook, but it's really easy to apply and to join the group. And we have some great conversations there. And sometimes we have the pleasure of some of these doctors who I interview popping in and answering questions every once in a while. So it's a really great community and a nice way to connect with like-minded people. Of course, if you'd like to work with me or have a consult or anything like that, again, the best place to reach me is natnidham.com. So that's natnidham.com. Thanks again for being here, and I will look forward to hearing from you and or seeing you on the next episode.